Before we start, a very quick note. I realized after we recorded the show that although we talked about the Washington caucuses and Super Tuesday next week, or this week, I should say at this point, we didn't actually recap at all what happened in Michigan and Arizona. That, of course, we talked about before they happened last week. Well, and really, there wasn't much to say. If you listened to our show last week, we predicted that Romney and Santorum would split Michigan, and Romney would win Arizona. And, well, that's exactly what happened. So, we were right. I don't know what else there was to say, because our further conversations about what would happen if that happened, you know, also pretty much are the case. So, anyway, on to the show. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, March 4th, 2012. I'm Sam Minter, Yvonne Bo is with me, and at the moment, Alex is sitting on my lap.
Hey, Alex.
You want to say hello? Yes. He's waving.
Oh, good. Okay, so I wave back. Okay.
Anyway. So anyway, we have an exciting show for you today, as always. We're you know, look, we're going to talk about the Washington caucuses because, you know, I went and caucused as a Republican, so I have stuff to say about that. Then we've got Super Tuesday, of course, coming up in a couple days. We're also probably going to talk a little bit about the upcoming iPad announcement. What else? Yvonne had a bunch of stuff he wanted to say about Microsoft and mice and Metro and touch and things like that. But first, before any of this, Yvonne, you had something really critical to say about a bridge.
Yeah, so I'm going through the news, right, and seeing what's happened the last week, and then I bump into this interesting news story, which reads, two men were arrested in China for stealing a bridge near Shanghai. The men broke it up into blocks and lifted it away with cranes before transporting it on a lorry truck to sell as a building as building stone. The bridge was built over a century ago. Now, I'm like, God, a bridge?
I just want to say, Alex went downstairs when you said that, and he went and got the bridge from his train set and has brought it to show you.
Oh, great. Well, I mean, well, he showed how easily it is to steal a bridge, I guess. I was just a little bit like,
he's holding it up to the screen.
I mean, you imagine you're in a small town or whatever, all of a sudden you're driving up to the road, and all of a sudden some guys are like, road's closed, we're taking down the bridge, You're like, what do you mean you're taking down the bridge? What the hell? Yeah, we're taking down the bridge. And so these guys just, they did get arrested, okay, for it. I will say. I guess they got caught, but I've heard of brazen thefts, but this takes the cake, I gotta say. Okay, so that's what I thought. Anyway, so I just thought that was just a little bit amusing for the week.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So what else is new and exciting? Where do we want to hit off the week? I mean, we've got so much. We've got a lot of stuff happened last week. So. Yep. Do we want to just hit the election stuff like right away?
Let's jump into election and then we'll do tack at the end.
So you caucused, okay? All right.
Yes.
Let me ask this question. I mean, okay, I'm assuming.
And of course, I did this 4 years ago on the Democratic side.
Right. So Washington, you don't have to be registered.
There is no party registration. You know, at when you sign up for the caucus, you basically say, you know, I consider myself a Republican. And will not participate in the other party's caucus.
Okay, which you were not planning to anyway.
I might have done it just to see what it was like, but it's kind of stupid with one major candidate. But, you know, and I have no problem considering myself a Republican for the purpose of the caucuses. It's not over for me yet, so I will continue to consider myself a Republican for a short amount of time. Generally, as everybody knows, I consider myself really an independent. I don't really, you know, consider myself bound to either of these parties, and will leave my options open for November.
Plus, you've always liked Ron Paul anyway.
I have liked Ron Paul. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day about this in terms of how it plays out. Like, and one of the things I haven't talked about on the show yet that I keep meaning to is, like, 4 years ago, on the day before the Iowa caucuses, I posted not just my predictions for the year, but my endorsements and, you know, saying who I liked and blah, blah, blah. I haven't done this time around because I actually am somewhat conflicted. Because if I look at the two or three or four issues I feel most strongly about, like civil liberties, like you know, the relatively limited foreign policy, intellectual property, things like this. In every single one of those cases, Obama's on the wrong side. Right. But of course, the Republican is too. You know,
so it's kind of like, yeah, I know. It's
now, in the case of Ron Paul, he's actually on the right side of my list of the top three or four issues I care about. However, he's also a nut job.
Right.
You know, and so, like, every time he speaks, I hear him, like, talk about civil liberties, and I'm like, yay. I hear him talking about stopping unnecessary wars. Yay. I hear him talk about limited executive. Yay. And then he starts going off about the gold standard.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, okay, well, whatever, you know. But...
Yes, I know, that's the problem, I know. He's freaking, yeah.
So, yeah, but I'm willing, you know, for the purposes of this, like, my phone is making noise. See, it's a song. Okay, stop, there we go. Here you go, Alex. You can play with it now. But anyway, for the purposes of caucusing, I have no problem caucusing for Ron Paul. I think he's clearly, out of the four Republicans, he's the one that's closest to my views on anything. And so I have no problem doing that. And I went there and, you know, very much like the Democrats, just to review for people, caucuses are not like other voting. You don't go into a booth and push the little lever or put something on a computer screen. It's all public. You're in a room with a bunch of people. The initial sign-up sheets, you indicate your presidential preference, and that is the straw poll that the media actually counts. That's open. Everybody can see what you voted. The person who signs in after you sees your name and sees what you voted for. Even though that's what's reported in the media, that actually has no effect whatsoever on the delegate selection process. The actual delegate selection process is later, where you sit down with people from your precinct and you vote in delegates to the next stage of the caucus process. And in almost all states, it's multi-level. In Washington, the precinct caucuses vote in people to go to the county convention. The county convention votes in people to go to the state convention, and then the state convention votes on people to actually go to the national convention, and those are the delegates that count. So it's several levels removed from actually selecting delegates. So the actual result in all these caucus states is almost always no delegates were actually determined at all. And if you really wanted to try to predict, you know, the real delegate count, you'd actually have to contact all of the people who were elected at that first stage, ask how they intend to vote in the second stage, and do that calculation. But there are thousands and thousands of people selected at that first stage, and so that's a very difficult task to do, both in terms of figuring out who all those people are, figuring out how to contact them, getting answers from them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the media just reports these straw poll results, which actually have no impact whatsoever and aren't binding. And even after the delegates are selected through that whole process, oftentimes they go to the national convention unbound. So even though they stated a preference as they went through that process, they can change their minds whenever they want. So it is a very esoteric process, but, you know, the only thing that can be looked at right now really is the straw poll result, even though it doesn't matter. Just my quick story. Everybody knows the results overall. Romney won Washington State by a decent margin. Ron Paul actually came in second Very slightly edging out Santorum, and Gingrich was way behind. But in my particular caucus, and I did live tweet this, so anybody who follows my blog and my Twitter would know this already. But up until it actually started, I was the only one for my precinct there.
Wow.
And then a few minutes after it started, two more people from my precinct showed up. It was a couple. And so there were three people from my precinct total present. A fourth one had signed up on the sign-up sheet, but apparently left right after registering their straw poll preference and didn't stay for the actual caucus, which means their vote didn't actually matter. But anyway, so the three of us had to elect three delegates to the county convention. So the three of us became delegates to the county convention.
Oh, so you're a delegate to the county convention.
I'm a delegate to the county convention, which is the same level I got to in the...
yeah, that's right. I do
Democrats
remember that.
4 years ago. So,
wow.
Yeah, so now the nice couple at the table were Santorum supporters. So that's two Santorum and one one Ron Paul from my table.
Okay.
You know, so and we'll see how, and, you know, nice couple, you know, and I didn't want to get too deeply into the political conversation there. I was like, I'm here for Ron Paul, and they're like, we like Santorum. They talked a little bit about why they thought, you know, Ron Paul wasn't the right guy. I didn't try to convince them, and you know, that was that, you know, and so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing I don't go to those events, because I wouldn't, like, I'm for Ron Paul, and my reaction is like, what the fuck, are you stupid? I don't think that probably would have gone over well.
Well, and that's the thing, like, we had three people and three spots, so we basically just voted ourselves in. There was actually an alternate spot we left empty, so there's no alternate from our thing, so if any one of us don't show up, well, then our precinct gets one less delegate at the county convention.
Right.
You know, now, strictly speaking, we didn't have to nominate each other at the table. We could have nominated anybody who lives in our precinct. They didn't actually have to be present, but,
oh,
you know.
Oh, okay, but that would have been, you know, right.
Yeah,
I mean,
so.
Yeah, I get it. Right. Okay.
So anyway, I mean, that's how the whole caucus thing works. It's very interesting, but very, I don't know, I tend to be more in favor of the straight election. I understand this sort of, like, theoretically, you get to be more involved and be with your community, and it sort of activates you. Like, if I was a party diehard, this would be a place where they could recruit me as a volunteer, you know, things like that. But I'm not sure it's worth it. I mean, and you know, theoretically, I didn't try to convince them. They didn't try to really convince me. However, that's part of the horse trading that goes on. Some of the tables, you know, had, you know, three or four spots to fill, but had like 20 people at the table. And so they had to go through multiple rounds of balloting, and people were trying to convince each other that they were the right person to go to the next level, things like that. None of that happened with us, but I think it's all a lot of extra overhead, and actually results in a lot fewer people participating. Like, you know, the attendance at caucuses is very small compared to attendances at, like, primaries and things. Because it's not just you drop in for a couple minutes and you do your vote. It's a several-hour commitment.
Right.
You know, I mean, just to do what I did yesterday, I was there from 9 a.m. to a little after noon. Now, a lot of people left earlier than that. And like I said, you know, four people signed up for my precinct, and one of them signed up and then immediately left after registering their straw poll vote. So they only took a couple minutes. But to actually participate in the whole process, you're there for a few hours. And if you get elected as delegate to the next level, that's an even bigger commitment. You know, like, now I have to go somewhere a little bit further. Like, the place this was held was an elementary school less than a mile from my house. The next level is in the same county, but a little bit further away. And instead of being 3 hours, you know, if the Democratic one was anything to judge by, this next one's going to be like 8 or 9 hours.
Did you get him a drum set over there?
Yeah, sorry about that. Hey, Alex, can you do that somewhere else? He's playing with the bridge that he brought because you were talking about bridges.
Great.
Alex.
Why don't we take a little break for a second?
Can you make it right? Yeah, I think we're done with this topic anyway. Let's take a break. And we'll...
Exactly.
And we'll talk about Super Tuesday when we come back.
Right.
We'll be right back. He's hammering my keyboard.
Yes, I can tell.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Bye.
Bye. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right. An opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show. Which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And, hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime. Either on a regular show with Yvonne, if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Well, think about it this way. Next year, we probably could have this going on both sides at the same time.
There you go. A game? Can you play on the phone?
No.
No, no playing on the phone?
On the phone.
No.
I know, you want to play a game on the computer, but I'm talking to Yvonne right now. Anyway, we're back, so let's talk about Super Tuesday.
Okay, Super Duper Tuesday.
So I'll start by saying that as of recording of this show, I was just about done with and ready to post post gaming out Super Tuesday. By the time anybody listens to this, it'll be out there. Basically, I took a projection done by a blog called Sabato's Crystal Ball. Which is run by some political science professors, I believe, at the University of Virginia. It's the University of Virginia Center for Politics. And they gamed out what they think will happen in on Super Tuesday based on recent polls, based on the exact delegate rules in every state, all of this kind of stuff. And they also gamed out Washington and overestimated Santorum a bit in Washington. But look, the bottom line is what they project is Romney gets just under 200, Romney 197, Santorum 144, Gingrich 46, Paul 26. And I mapped that out to see what that actually means in terms of, you know, totals and everything else. And basically, look, it's already almost clear at this point, but... What this will do is nail down that after Super Tuesday, it will be absolutely and totally clear that Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, and Rick Santorum are not going to be the nominee of the Republican Party.
Really?
I know you're shocked. You know, basically, all three of them are going to win some, but not win at anywhere near the volume necessary in order to actually be catching up with Romney. And Romney himself, yes, Alex, Romney himself, even though he's will win the day by a significant margin, and by the way, this is helped by things like, yes, Alex, this will be helped by things like the fact that Only Romney and Paul are on the ballot in Virginia, which is a pretty big state. It's helped by the fact that while Santorum has been in the lead or close to the lead in Ohio in all the recent polls, he didn't bother to select a slate of delegates in several of the congressional districts, So he even if he blew out the state, he still couldn't win most a significant fraction of the delegates from the state. You know, so it's helped by those kinds of things. But the bottom line is, in the end, Romney still continues to hover right around that 50% mark. He won't have actually improved his position by very much out of the day. He's still hovering right around that level where even though none of the other three are in active contention to win, they are still within shooting distance of blocking him. And so the question coming out of the state is going to be all about what the spin is. Because, look, here's what happens. If it's absolutely clear they're not going to win, in general, people stop voting for you. You know, because,
right? That's the and that's the thing, right? I mean, all of a sudden you lose that, you lose support. People are like, ah, why am I gonna go? Whatever, he's gonna lose, and then all the momentum goes to Romney. And then
so like, Romney's only been able to collect Alex. Romney's only been able to collect, you know, around 50% of the delegates so far. Alex, do we need to take a break? Do I need to take you to mommy? We'll be right back. Let me continue this thought in a second. Say bye, Alex. He's waving. Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, I'm back. So, where was I? It's really hard to concentrate and think coherently when someone's climbing all over you at the same time.
Really? You think?
I don't know what makes it difficult, but bottom line is, if the predictions for Super Tuesday are anywhere close to right, Romney will still be within shooting distance of the collective non-Romneys being able to block him.
Well, I mean,
The important but here is, again, can they sustain the momentum and continue getting delegates when it is clear
they're not going to win?
They're not going to win. The only, like, you know, can they build a continued campaign and continue to get delegates simply on the basis of stop Romney?
Right.
You know, now, there can also be continued dynamic changes. Let's say, you know, despite his protestations that he's not going to, Gingrich drops out. And Gingrich says, my folks should support Santorum. That changes the dynamics of the race. I don't think it changes the result, but, you know, it changes the dynamics somewhat if something dramatic like that were to happen. But basically, in order to keep up the possibility of blocking Romney, the other three candidates almost have to essentially make it about blocking Romney.
Right.
And say, you need to keep voting for me because even though, you know, I'm way, way behind, we can still stop Romney and then see what happens at the convention. You know, because and that possibility will probably still be within reach immediately after Super Tuesday. And then whether it stays in reach is going to depend all about the spin. And this is how I'm sort of summarizing my last paragraph on the blog post I'm, you know, on this. It's all about the spin. If the spin after Super Tuesday, if you hear all the talking heads talking, it's all over, Romney's got it wrapped up, then guess what? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It will probably happen. It will probably happen fairly quickly. The non-Romneys will sort of very rapidly fade. If they don't drop out, they'll stop getting delegates or very many delegates, and Romney will finally start marching towards actually closing in on the nomination. Alternately, if the spin coming out of Super Tuesday is, oh my God, look how well Santorum did in all these states. Maybe Santorum wins Ohio. Maybe, you know, we know Gingrich is probably going to win Georgia. There are several other states that Romney is going to lose. If the spin out of it is, look at all these states these other people won, Romney's having trouble closing the deal, and, oh, Virginia doesn't count because the other guys weren't on the ballot. And, you know, then these other guys have some more time to keep trying. And again, at this point, they're not really trying to win. They're trying to block. And so if the spin out of Super Tuesday is all about Romney failing to close the deal, other people winning states, blah, 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 then this is going to continue a while longer. I don't think the result changes in the end. I think this is Romney's nomination. And he's close enough, by the way, to the line. Like, yes, if the non-Romneys do a little bit better, they could block him from the nomination. If the projections for Super Tuesday are right, if they continued at the same rate, they could block him from the nomination. Let me just double check. But that's a hard task to do.
Why don't we talk about the Super Tuesday states, okay? And what's going on in those, okay? Uh-huh. I'm actually, one thing is that I'm like looking at this, and I don't have a good view of them right now. I'm looking at some of the latest polls,
yep.
But I'm not seeing.
They're frustratingly few states. Polls for Super Tuesday.
Yeah. But let's talk about the ones that are there. For example, let's talk about Georgia. For example, at this point,
yeah.
Okay. Georgia. Here's the thing about this: is like what you mentioned. I mean, Georgia is showing that Gingrich is up by about 15 points, and he's definitely going to take Georgia, for example. So that's not going to be a Romney win. Right. Romney's going to come in second, it looks like, with about 3.8% of the vote. And that's from polls that are pretty recent, actually. So Georgia does have about four polls that have been done in the last 10 days or so. Okay? So that's Georgia. So let's move to Ohio.
Yep.
Santorum is looking like he's leading Ohio.
Yes,
and actually, it's consistent. There are four polls that were done since February 29th.
And again, this is one of the split ones. Santorum will almost certainly lose in delegates in Ohio simply because he failed to do all the paperwork. But if he wins the popular vote in Ohio, people aren't going to be talking about the fact that he lost in delegates. They're going to be talking about the fact that he won the state.
That's right. That's correct. And right now there are four polls. I mean, they are within the margin of error, but all four show a Santorum lead varying between 2 to 4 points, okay, on all four polls, with Romney just right behind him, okay? So that's Ohio. Let's go to now Tennessee, okay?
Yep. Tennessee also has Santorum significantly ahead.
Santorum significantly ahead. There's four polls since February 16th that have been done, okay? Now, I will say this, that the poll – well, the poll that was done the most recently, okay, if I go to the February 16th to 22nd poll, it showed about an 18-point lead. There was another one February 13th through the 25th that showed a 21-point lead of Santorum. However, the one that was just done yesterday –
has him only up by four.
So that's, and with Romney nipping right behind him. So that's another one there. The next state we got over here is Oklahoma. And Oklahoma, let's see. There's only been two polls. One of the polls was done February 21st, but that was like way back when there was that big Romney bump. It shows him up 21 points. But right now, who the hell knows?
Yeah,
for all practical intent.
But then we have like Virginia, where Romney is going to win over Ron Paul clearly,
correct.
And the other two aren't on the ballot. We have Massachusetts, where
Romney's
probably going to walk away with that.
Right.
Let's see, what else do we have? We have Alaska. I don't think there's been any polling done in Alaska, but it's so who the hell knows?
Who the hell knows?
we have Idaho. Also, I don't think there's been any polling.
Okay.
So the crystal ball source I used, by the way, makes Alaska essentially a three-way split between Romney, Santorum, and Paul.
Okay.
It makes Idaho a split between Romney and Paul, with Santorum a little bit behind them. Gives Massachusetts very strongly to Romney. Then we have North Dakota, also not really any polling there. Basically split it between Romney, Santorum, and Paul. Give a little bit to Gingrich. Ohio is pretty much an even split between Romney and Santorum. Who knows who will win? Delegate-wise, it'll be an even split. Give Oklahoma to Santorum. Give Tennessee to Santorum. Vermont give to Romney. Virginia give to Romney. You know, so it's going to be a split night, you know, almost no matter what. And again, so that's where the spin comes in. In terms of delegates, Romney is going to is going to increase his lead significantly. He's not going to quite be on track for winning outright. You know, he needs to do a little bit better than he's done so far for that. But he's going to be so far ahead of the other guys. They're so far behind. The task needed to catch up is insane. So, like, in terms of delegates, and like I said, I have a post on this. Look on abelsmay.com. You'll see it. If only my keyboard would work. There we go. But, you know, here's what those numbers look like. You know, Ron Paul, if the predictions from Sabato's crystal ball are even close, then he would have 9.9% of the delegates. But in order to catch up and win, he'd have to actually win 71% of all the remaining delegates.
Not happening.
Gingrich would have 12.4% of the delegates, but would need 69.9% to catch up and win. Not happening.
Not happening.
Santorum would have 28%, so better than the other two, but he'd still need 61.7% of the remaining delegates to catch up and win.
Mm-mm.
Meanwhile, Romney would actually be under 50%. He would have gotten 49.7% of the delegates so far, which is not over 50%, which is what you need to win. But in order to catch up and win, he'd only needs to get 50.2% of all the remaining delegates, which is just slightly more than what we have. So, like, again, you know, spin-wise, if people are like, oh, it's over, then guess what? Romney's going to easily exceed 50.2% the rest of the way and get that. If on the other hand, the spin is not about delegates and the spin is about, you know, Santorum won 3 states, Romney won 2, Gingrich won 1, you know, however it adds up, if it's about states and it's all about, look at all these states Santorum won, then maybe this lasts a while longer because, you know, people don't give up on voting for them yet. You know, and that's the key. When do they give up on voting for these guys?
And that's the unpredictable part. And I think that
and again, the like, way... if the three non-Romneys collectively actually shifted their campaigns to no longer being at all about them, and just being about, look, guys, we have to block Romney, then maybe they can consolidate the non-Romney support and block Romney. But they have to make that, they almost have to make that explicit at this point. Because if it continues to be about, you know, Santorum should be your nominee, well, that's not going to happen.
Yep. I agree with you on that.
I guess they could also make the argument that the only way for that to happen is to block Romney so that you can select me at the convention. But
I don't know. But I don't know if people are going to buy that as a long-term argument. I think the main thing is, I think you're right. I think that, look, people may still continue to vote if they get rallied as like, you know, look, voice your displeasure, block Romney, don't let this just go through. But, you know, if after Tuesday it looks like an inevitable freight train, I don't think that there's enough people that are going to give a shit to go out and, like, try to express that.
And again, I think this all depends on how the spin goes, and that depends on, in part, how the press wants it to go.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which leads me to think that if I had to make a prediction right now, I'd say this goes on a little while longer. I think Romney still wins in the end, but it's in the press's interest to drag this contest out as long as they can.
You want to drag this out all the way to...
You know, so they're not going to be like, you're not going to see Wolf Blitzer saying it's all over.
Right.
You know, they're going to be pulling out the little board with all the states and saying, well, if these guys win these states and these guys win this state, they can still block Romney. And so, yeah, we're going to keep going.
Yep. I agree with you on that. So, All right.
Okay,
so
enough Super Tuesday. We'll know what happened. I'll try to actually get this show out before Super Tuesday so we don't look completely stupid. And we'll talk about what actually happened next week. But, you know, I think what we're saying today will be right.
I think, yes.
Anyway, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about some tech stuff for a little while. If I can find the stop button. There we go.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on,
baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tune it up all the way.
I got a dance.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, Yvonne. We're back.
We're back. You know, I was just looking at my desk, and I have, like, this is old. It was done in 99. You know, Kodak went bankrupt, right? So I got these, like, photo CDs that Kodak made of some pictures that I took, like, sometime in 1999. You know, of course, Kodak went belly up. So, anyway, I just thought that was a little bit interesting that I had those.
Make sure you can still open them.
I have copied them to my computer.
Okay, because I remember for a while at the dawn of the digital picture age, there were a couple of those folks who were like, you know, they would process your digital pictures for you. Like if you brought in your film pictures and asked for like a copy on a digital copy, they'd give you something, but it would be in some proprietary format that you couldn't use for other crap, which was really annoying and stupid.
Those were I know that I easily imported them into my.
So
I was going to talk a little bit about Microsoft went and like this week, you know, they were launching. They were talking a lot about the user interface of the computer, okay? And they talked a lot about the mouse and how, well, the mouse, you know, because so many people are using touch devices, how the mouse has lost importance. And the Metro interface, if anybody, any of you are interested, I mean, if you go to news.com, there was an article regarding, like, that interface and how it is emphasizing touch in a lot of instances. Now, they are aware that a lot of people, I mean, still anyway, touching my screen. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, going, maybe that's not what they're doing right now on a computer, but let's face it, because they're focused a lot on mobile computing and other things, how that, and people are using that a lot more, how that's the way that things are going, and that the mouse is not going to be anywhere nearly as important as it used to be. But I got to say one thing, that I am just not so convinced, okay? All right? And I'll tell you why. Something happened at home recently, which, like, you know, like, put this into perspective, okay? So, as I have mentioned on this program before, I have a desktop Mac, okay, which right now I went and I checked and I realized how old it really is. It's 9 years old, by the way.
That's a pretty elderly Macintosh.
Yes, okay.
I always use the analogy, like, you know how they do dog years?
Yeah.
You multiply by 7 or something.
Sure.
I figure for computers, you're multiplying by 20 or 25. So like, let's call it 20. So like a 3-year-old computer is like a 60-year-old person.
So mine's a 4-year-old computer.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. So, but here's the thing. Like lately, well, the one thing is that the other day, I actually found a copy of Microsoft Office that actually works on this computer. Okay.
Okay.
So a couple of weeks ago, so I reinstalled Microsoft Office, and there are converters that, you know, work pretty well to convert if you get anybody sending you those .xml files that automatically convert the files.
Right, so
we've been using Office on this computer, so I installed Office, and so I got all the productivity software and everything, so the computer's like all up and running. Well, and so we've been doing, like, we started a little company, me and my wife, and we've been doing a whole bunch of business stuff. Well, this is the one thing. My wife the other day started sitting in front of the computer because this one has a 20-plus inch screen. Guess what? The other day I keep going. I'm like, well, honey, why aren't you using the laptop? Why are you sitting on this damn computer? I'm like, it's so damn old. Well, I'm sorry, but the screen is so much bigger. It's a lot nicer to work on than being on the laptop.
Yep.
And I'm like, you know, all of a sudden I go, and I'm reading this thing about the small device, the tablet, and the thing, and the whatever. And yeah, I get it. I realize that. But you know what? I mean, I am still like, you know, my wife lately has been sitting at this computer instead of a laptop and whatever because the screen is just so much bigger.
Yeah,
and she likes the comfort of the mouse.
Look, we've talked a long time. We've said that whenever we talk about tablets, we talk about a lot of people don't need anything else. The tablet is all that they need. But that's not to say that the usefulness for the desktops goes away entirely.
No. Now,
there are still uses where having the big screen and the full-sized keyboard and all of that makes sense. You know, there are still cases where the laptop makes sense over the tablet, but it's just a smaller set of cases that you need that stuff for. And a lot of people
right.
don't need it at all. But yeah, there are absolutely things where, you know, if given the choice of, you know, my small laptop screen or, you know, a nice, like I'm sitting in front of a 27-inch monitor, you know, it's a nice monitor. There's lots of screen real estate. There's, you know, you can do all kinds of stuff in that. You can put all kinds of windows side by side.
Right.
You can,
right.
you know, all this kind of stuff. I can be doing one thing and have like a little window in the corner playing TV or something. You know, there's all kinds of stuff you can do. There is need for that. Now, there is a question going forward. Do you end up with some sort of convertible solution where you have your tablet that can plug into a keyboard, that can plug into a monitor, whatever, and sort of convert upward when you need it?
I guess maybe they will come to that. I mean, it's something that, you know, would be nice if it's easily done. But, you know, I don't know. Here's the one thing. People, for whatever reason, I mean, over the years, I know that I was a big fan of docking stations. I've had them
yep.
for a long time. Okay. You know, but I've never seen it really catch on in general.
You know,
I don't know why.
Well, you know, that's something that they've always been sort of clunky and blah, blah, blah. You'd have to do it in a lot smoother way. Like,
maybe that's something that Apple maybe can reinvent.
I think that's the kind of thing that if Apple wanted to, they could make a docking experience that was actually
totally wireless.
Like, really nice.
Yeah,
it might be totally wireless. It might be that, like, for instance, your iPad just slides into a slot in the side of your 27-inch monitor.
Right.
You know,
and that's it.
Who knows? You know? So there are a bunch of ways that you could potentially do something like that that's a lot nicer than it's been done in the past. There's also the question of, like, right now with a docking station, you know, you gain the monitor, you gain the keyboard, you gain the mouse, but you don't really gain anything else. What if when you plugged it in, you also gained more processor power and more hard drive space or whatever, but it was just all seamless?
That's something. But here's the other thing I saw. Well, I did see that Apple also did launch – what's the name of the new operating system? I forget now. Mountain Lion?
Mountain Lion, yes.
Mountain Lion. That in Mountain Lion, they did – add the feature to be able to project what you're working on your computer in all sorts of remote displays.
Yes.
Okay.
Wirelessly through AirPlay.
Right. Wirelessly through AirPlay, which is something that, let's face it, will bring to people the ability, if you have newer TVs with a high-resolution screen, you can go and, like, say, be sitting in your living room, and instead of working on your small laptop display or whatever... Throw it on the TV.
Yep.
And, you know, that's definitely something that is significant. And let's see what the impact of that is, because that's not something that's been available easily with any computing platform, period, up until now.
Right.
And I'm wondering what the impact of that feature will have on people's, like, use of computers. So,
I mean, I can definitely see this kind of thing converging in the future. Like, you know, I'm carrying around my iPad. I'm doing my stuff on my iPad. And occasionally I want to do something that requires a keyboard. So I just, like, add the keyboard and boom, off I go and I do that. And then I get home and so I throw it up on my big screen TV and I play there and I do what I'm doing there, you know, maybe with my keyboard, maybe not, you know, but all of these things potentially, like, seamlessly moving, you know, between each other.
Right.
I'm not predicting that that's what's going to be announced for the iPad this week. But I can see that direction happening in the next few years.
Well, I mean, and what I see right now, I mean, a lot of the, I mean, I don't know. Other than, I mean, I guess nobody's talked about anything. I mean, I haven't seen anything like breakthrough, like really like being expected from the new iPad. I think expecting some basic things: higher resolution display, higher processor speed, maybe some tweaks in the software, and probably availability of additional models at lower prices.
And they've been talking about 4G.
And 4G. But, you know, here's the thing, though. 4G, 3G, bullshit. Look, I don't know. You've seen all the articles this week about users getting their data speeds throttled.
Yep. And we talked about
almost
that
all carriers.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, there was a massive thing this week about AT&T and their throttling policy and how they've basically told all unlimited users, you know what? You're not unlimited. Screw you. We don't care.
Right.
And I'm just like, I mean, I'm a little like, what the hell's the matter? What does it matter to me if it's 3G or 4G? What the fuck if I'm not, if I got to be counting bits?
Yeah. I mean, in that case, 4G just means you blow through your bits faster.
Faster, yeah.
You know, and they do give you a slightly higher allowance in the 4G plans, from what I read. But anyway, you're absolutely right. You blow through it faster. I'd also like to say, the number of situations where this differs very much by location, because you still get reports of like in heavily used areas like New York and San Francisco, the 3G sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and you still get reports about how that network just can't handle it, and it's always a problem, and you can't do stuff. Here where I am, almost all of the time, the 3G is more than adequate for what I'm doing. You know, and I do occasionally stream video, and I listen to audio a bunch, and, you know, yes, most of the time I'm actually still on Wi-Fi anyway, but even when I'm not, it works. It works okay. I'm not getting frustrated every day by download speeds. I get frustrated every once in a while by download speeds. I get frustrated by coverage. Like yesterday when I was trying to live tweet the caucuses, there was crappy coverage in the room and I could barely do anything. But that wasn't because I was hitting network speed issues. That was because I had crappy coverage. Yeah.
Well, yesterday, for example, I went to, I was at the grand opening of the new downtown baseball stadium down here in Miami, and I went there, and I mean, there's like, you know, one of the things that I complained when I've been to large sporting events or large gatherings, right? So there was like 40,000 people over there, dude. The 3G was useless.
Yeah, because everybody tries to use it and it just falls over and dies.
Yeah, but my point is that AT&T and all the carriers know there's a stadium, you jackass. There's going to be 40,000 people there on a regular basis. You can't account for that on your network? I mean, that's what I don't understand. You know there's going to be that many people there concentrating on a regular basis. And every time I go to, like, say, an event like that, it's always, like, impossible. It's a good thing, though, that they did have Wi-Fi in the and they do have Wi-Fi in the stadium. And I was with the I know the director of technology for the stadium. Okay, so I was actually there with him, and I went connected to the Wi-Fi. So I connected to the Wi-Fi, and the Wi-Fi they had. Yeah, he told me, yeah, we got plenty of bandwidth. Don't worry about it. It's blazing fast. So when I connected to the Wi-Fi, it was just boom. I mean, it was just like zooming. Okay, they got over there. I don't know what the hell they put in. I didn't ask him specifically what the hell they put in, but yeah, there was plenty of bandwidth. I was like, okay, perfect. But I couldn't get a text message out. Let me put it to you that way. That's how clogged the network was. I could not get a text message out. I mean, I was like, what the fuck?
Those take so much bandwidth.
Exactly. And I'm like, dude, if I can't send a fucking text message, I mean, what the hell? Forget about sending a picture.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. Fucking carriers suck.
yeah. I still wish Google had bought that wireless spectrum and done something interesting with it, but, you know.
We'll see what the hell happens in the next year or so, you know. I mean, one of the things that they're talking about, I don't know if you saw one of the things that AT&T did tell to application providers, is that, say, for example, okay, so we got this problem with, like, the users, right? But they did say that if, you know, say you're DirecTV and you have that DirecTV streaming app, they said that they would start allowing providers to pay for bandwidth to carry programs or stuff.
Yeah. I saw that. I don't know how well that's going to go over, but I mean, yeah.
It depends. I mean, I don't know. It depends if they. It depends if the carrier say, but it that may work because you got to understand something. Like DirecTV charges. If you want to access, for example, NFL Sunday Ticket on your phone or what you know on your phone or
iPad or whatever. Yeah.
They charge you an extra $40 to do that. Uh-huh. So they are charging you for it. So if they but you know but what's the point of me charging $40 for something that the people can't receive because you're going to go over your bandwidth limits?
Yeah.
So they may be incented to say, well, shit, if I'm charging $50, I want to make sure the people use it because people are going to be canceling because well, what the fuck? I'm like, well, what the hell? Yeah, great. I paid $50 for something and the fucking carrier keeps telling me I'm over my data limit.
Well, and then so you allow that application to bypass the data limit. You know, all of this kind of stuff, like, you know, it gets back to the net neutrality debate and all of this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's managing your network. Yeah, it's finding creative ways to monetize by giving some traffic preference over others. But fundamentally, in a lot of ways, I see this as, you know, very bad for the health of the overall ecosystem. Because what you get is, you know, then... You know, the folks who enter in these kinds of deals get preferred treatment. You're going more and more back towards the old model of closed networks and closed ecosystems where, yeah, okay, you can see the Comcast stuff, but if you want to see the stuff from our competitors, well, that's going to suck.
But that's already happening now.
I mean, it's already happening. So I just don't like it.
I don't like it either. I mean, let's face it. I keep going to one of these sites where, say, I'm subscribed to something or whatever, and I'm like, well, you're not part of this, so forget it. You can't stream this content. And I'm like, fuck me. Really? I don't know. So, anyway.
Yeah, well, it's to me, it's even – like the DirecTV doing the special deal with the carrier worries me more than just like, you know, okay, you have to pay for Hulu Plus. Okay, big deal. You pay for Hulu Plus. No, but the carrier making a deal with the content provider is what bothers me because then, okay, so you're saying if you have AT&T, you'll get a good experience with your DirecTV app, but if you're on Verizon, you don't. Meanwhile, if you're on AT&T, if you use the DirecTV app, you get something really cool. But if you're trying to get the show streamed off of Netflix, it sucks because Netflix hasn't made that deal. Yeah, that and so therefore, DirecTV and Netflix are no longer competing on an even ground for your business because one of them has the deal with the carrier that makes their service better.
Right. Well, so here we are. This is our new reality. That's where we're at. I'm not sure we could do anything
and
much
more
about
it. More and more every year, you know, the name of this show becomes more apt as we become more curmudgeonly.
Yes, absolutely.
Get off my damn lawn.
Well, you'll be saying that pretty soon when your kids' friends start like jumping up and down on it. And, like, pulling out your grass and you know, doing all of that.
Exactly.
Right.
So, anyway, do we have any other topics or do we wrap it up?
I think we can wrap it up for today. We can wrap it up for today.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. There's another Curmudgeon's Corner down. We'll be back next week to talk about what actually happened in Super Tuesday, which will be just what we said it would happen this week, by the way. But, you know, because we're that certain about our predictions.
We are the prognosticators, baby.
Ron Paul is going to come back and win it. Win it all.
Yay! Woohoo! We're going to go back to the gold standard!
Anyway, and then he's going to have us all read his racist newsletters from the 80s or whenever they were.
Okay.
Anyway, we're done. Thanks for joining us. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, etc. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye. Say goodbye, Yvonne.
Bye-bye.